Actually, this is linked to an increase of burnout, and it doesn't give to the clinician the real time to be at the bedside, to talk with the patient, to touch the patient, and to understand what's going on.
Hello, welcome to episode 47 of the MedTech Podcast. You join me, your host, Karandeep Singh Badwal, and in this episode, I have Pietro Arena, critical care physician at Cleveland Clinic London and AI PhD students at University College London. In this episode, Pietro discusses the concerns about the impact on physician workload with the increase in technology within healthcare, the key milestones in the development of AI in medicine, the concept of personalized medicine, and the most promising areas of research at the intersection of AI and medicine. Welcome to the show, Pietro. How are you today?
Hi, Karandeep. Thank you very much for having me here. It's a real pleasure.
Pleasure having you on. So to start off with, can you perhaps share some examples for the audience of how artificial intelligence is currently being used in critical stay and anesthesia?
Yes, so the story of application of AI to anesthesia, perioperative and critical care is quite new, but we can start to see the first implementation with simple logistic regression and simple way of interpreting a massive amount of data in the last 10 of years. Starting from anesthesia, but before going in deep, what I want to just say is that so in critical care and in anesthesia, we would like to use AI, and we are programming to use AI for a set of different tasks. The first one is to predict the outcome of patient. The second one is to having aid during the clinical practice to understand a possible acute event before it happened. And another possibility is actually to, and this is most probably what could happen in the next foreseeable future is to have a huge help in managing the incredible amount of data that we obtain from our patient and try to discriminate that in a simple way. So if we want to create a simple schematics of where are we at the moment of the application, we are still in the early phases. Talking about anesthesia and perioperative, that is that part of medicine that encompass the taking care of the patient before, during and after surgery. So far in the clinical practice, there are non routine and standardized AI that has been used. But there are a lot of research and a lot of groups that are actually using simple type of machine learning to actually try to predict the risk of, for example, hypotension after anesthesia induction, bradycardia during surgery, or the risk of hypoxia during surgery. Another type of study that we found was actually that I found in a study that I'm doing at the moment about a systematic review of this literature is about the fact that there is a lot of interest by clinicians to try to understand which features, which variable of the patient actually are extremely important to discriminate the patient in subgroups. And then use these features and in a more or less complex model to try to predict the different outcome against the same stress that usually is a type of surgery. So at the moment, this is the one of the most important topics in perioperative medicine, because actually we want to understand what are the difference between the patient, and the machine learning is helping us to analyze a huge amount of data. Finally, in critical care, usually the diagnostic in critical care is based on clinical diagnosis, so we tend to have common symptom that then taken together, analyzed together, give us an idea of what's going on with the patient. So we are using actually AI to, we can use AI to have a sum of what's going on in the patient and try again to understand what's the difference between different patients and also what could be the response to a certain type of therapy.
So as someone that is a critical care physician who started their career from, what I'm correct, is around 2015, at what point in your career did you get exposed to artificial intelligence? And what is it about AI that made you consider taking on a PhD, which you're currently doing right now?
I think that the huge explosion of AI, that was also the moment where I actually discovered the application of AI, happened around 2017, 2018. And then it became exponentially bigger due to COVID. So during COVID, as a critical care doctor, I was actually wondering myself what we can actually do for our patient. We have something that we don't really understand. We have a respiratory failure patient in ICU. We have a huge flow of patients to the hospital. Everything was quite under stress, I think, that like everybody knows. And the AI was presented, machine learning AI were presented actually as the possible solution to the management of this new huge influx of data, and also the modelization based on machine learning was expected to give us a fast diagnosis from a radiological point of view, to recognize fast and also in the initial phases when the patient was actually COVID positive, to be able to be preemptive in the treatment. And then there is a plethora of study trying to interpret the outcome and to understand that. So I would say that my hugest position to data analysis and to the fact that in the data there is some truth was what driven me to deciding to pursue that and to continue to analyze the data with this incredible potential algorithm. And this is why now I started in 2011 a PhD in perioperative medicine, and actually I'm looking at the application of advanced AI to perioperative medicine.
So with the other doctors that you work with day in, day out, do you find that there is more of an interest in terms of learning about AI, or do you feel as though many doctors have not quite caught on to it yet?
This is such a great question, because actually there is a huge Facebook group in Italy that is talking about, is a community of doctor, because I come from Italy, so I tend to have a double life as a doctor, and I'm actually a little bit of a nerd, so I have to be honest, I'm biased towards everything that is AI related. But at the same time, I want to understand. I asked my colleagues here in UK and in Italy, so that's a sort of minimal study that I made by myself, and I found that doctors these days, they are interested in AI for the potential help that can give to actually the biggest problem that medicine in Europe and around the world is having at the moment. We can see those problems in increase of amount of work, because we have a lot of bureaucracy, a lot of stuff to do, and the time is less and less. So most of the doctor, and in my opinion, this is one of the most important fields where the AI needs to develop before the others, is to create some tools that we can call like Alexander steroids, that can really help doctor to do admission note, discharge note, and to take in order and recognize pattern in the patient in a fast way without spending too much time at the computer. Some study came out a few years ago, proved that nowadays, in UK it's called a young doctor, but a trainee or a doctor, a doctor who is actually working in the world, spend 60% of his time using the computer. And actually, this is linked to an increase of burnout, and it doesn't give to the clinician the real time to be at the bedside, to talk with the patient, to touch the patient, and to understand what's going on. So this is where I see that a lot of doctors really wants to have an eye from that point of view. The second part of the interest of that doctors can have in AI, and I recognize myself also in the second bit, is using AI to actually understanding all the non-linear correlation that we have between the data, the outcome, and try to increase our medical knowledge. Because as human, we tend to learn and think in a linear way. If you look at the medical literature, pretty much the most of the knowledge that we have is about one thing's correlated to another in a linear or curvilinear way. But the machine learning can help us, and actually what we do in the research at the moment with the feature selection, feature ranking, we can try to understand with more complex model what are the features that are actually more important for a subgroup instead for another. And this is an interesting step forward, what we can call personalized medicine. That, I have to be honest, we are not there, because we don't know which field are important for personalized medicine, if the genetic, the epigenetic, up to the social level. But actually the AI AI could be the tool that can help us to actually simplify this complex task.
So following on from that, could you walk us through perhaps some of the key milestones in the development of artificial intelligence in medicine, from logistical regression to large language models like ChatGPT and MedPalm, or perhaps any other equivalents that may not be so popular?
Okay, so let's say that the logistic regression is the starting point somehow, and it represents the connection between the statistics, that is what I actually started with, and the what I call a classic machine learning algorithm. Despite it has the same name, the logistic regression done with machine learning is more complex, but actually this is usually the starting point. So there are a lot of paper. We can talk about all the world medicine, where actually the researcher were linking outcome or disease or condition, etc., to certain features. For example, at the beginning of COVID, with simple multilinear correlation, was possible to understand that patients with high BMI, hypertension, diabetes were a higher risk of mortality during COVID. And this is a despite maybe who was doing this study was not aware of doing or using machine learning, this is an easy example of machine learning application. If we look at a milestone, in 2012 there was the AlexNet that came out as this first paper. It was the concept of neural network, and actually that was this represented the milestone for going towards radiological diagnostic, because it was the first convolutional neural network. And it was the first time that was possible to analyze a huge amount of non-tabular data and actually create a model that was able to then recognize a certain pattern in the images. And this is also the reason why at the moment the radiological and diagnostic part of medicine is the one that is taking more advantages, and where we can see that the AI is already developed clinically, for example, for the screen of mammary cancer, or for the screening and for the screening of retinopathy diseases. There are already model developed who went through all the complex and really long scheme of approval. So they have FDA approval, and also they are already applied in a university hospital, and they became pretty much broadly used all around the world. In other fields like the anesthesia and critical care, talking with other colleagues, we are feeling that we are like 10 years ahead. So we are still 10 years away from that, because actually so far we have a plethora, we have a huge amount of AI that are simple AI, very far away from being an AGI, so augmented general intelligence. We have this simple model we call AI, but are actually machine learning that you can train with a certain data set to do one or two tasks. And when you look at the in the last couple of years, only in the United States, 500 different models were approved for clinical use in different field of medicine. So far I think we are in this sort of interregnum of a lot of people can, with their laptop and with a good database, create a simple model, and then this year, actually in the last between last year, this year, the large language model like ChatGPT or MedPalm, they just present themselves to the big public, and they actually represent another milestone. From my personal point of view, the fact that they show to people who is naive or artificial intelligence, who doesn't understand anything but has a lot of idea and they want to really use that to leverage themselves, that this is the way that we need to communicate with AI. Like when Xerox created the user interface, or Apple created the iPhone. Those are those milestones where you create something that was already existed since a couple of years, but then it became applicable to the broader humanity. So nowadays, everybody with a computer, a keyboard, can actually interact with a quite complex model. But those large language models are interesting because, yes, they know a lot. There is a lot of debate going on about the possibility of conscious, but actually this is still a debate about ChatGPT-4 because it's training on billions of parameters. They represent an entry point, in my opinion. They represent the fact that, okay, we know that we, for the future, most probably the AI that we want to interact with, they need to work in that way, but they are not trained for medicine, despite they were able to overcome, to pass the USMLE or other medical certification. Those models, they still present a problem. First of all, the database that they are trained on are biased, and despite they contain a lot of medical knowledge, we don't know the quality of the knowledge that is in there. We don't know if there are information about biases against a minority or this kind of stuff. And also, the medicine is not just using the medical knowledge on a brute force, but is more on a heart of understanding. So far, I would say that we are at the beginning of a new era. It's like when Napster came out and everybody was talking about P2P.
So with the rise of technology, this of course means that hospitals will require more computing power or more internet access in order to utilize it effectively. And as you know, being based in the UK, if you walk into some hospitals, unfortunately, some of the computer technology that you have in there could be over 10 years older than the ones you have at your home. So do you think that AI and machine learning and technology in general is moving far quicker than the infrastructure can keep up with?
Yes, definitely yes. So actually, I'm a transhumanist, so in my private life, I'm really happy about seeing the development of AI, but I'm not worried, but it's really difficult to keep the pace with the incredible amount of news that came out every day in this particular field. But talking about the clinical implementation and the clinical setting, we have to be aware that everything in medicine tends to be at least twice slower compared to the normal, compared to the society. So medicine tends to accept and integrate novelty on a slower pace compared to other parts of society, because actually we have a lot of different level, and also we really need to think about the most important things: taking care of our patient and provide a continuous and up-to-date quality of care. And also the amount of money for doing this is not infinite. We are all aware that all the economical system and this health system around the world, they are in crisis. They were before COVID, now this crisis is maybe even worse. And also, we have the clinical settings, they work 24/7. So it's really difficult to update them, because taking them offline, update the system, etc., require actually to have more system working on parallel, where you can shut down one and using the second one to cover everything. So at the moment, the world system is not really at the top for that. And what we are working at is sometimes Windows XP in some place, Windows 10 computer that use electronic health records. This is despite the electronic health records in UK is becoming the standard. That's not the standard around the world, and I think we are really far away from having the ability of actually implement an AI in the system, because actually it would mean to have a whole lot new server system, and all the cost and all the energy related to that, all the people who manage that, etc. So I think that we are very far away from that so far in the general application.
So in terms of other parts of the world and what you see, are there any particular regions of the world where you find that technology is growing really quickly and they're ready to take it on in comparison to other places? And if so, where are those places and why would you say that is the case?
So I can talk about anesthesia and critical care. So in my personal experience that actually here in London we have some of the best center between the major university, UCL and First is really starting to apply ML to a lot of different topics. And I say that not only because I'm PhD there, but because I see that other possible places are Amsterdam. In Amsterdam, they created the Amsterdam database that is similar to the Mimic frame. So it's those are databases with a million of data point of ICU patient. And where you see this database, actually you see a development of AI and a development of ML, because this is where they feed with. So you have people with access to database and infrastructure and professor who are happy to teach them how to use this stuff, and they have the idea on what to do. Another example, it's the San Raffaele di Milano. I have a connection with one of the professors there, and actually it's really interesting that place, because they are with Microsoft, they are creating a pipeline of collecting the data and creating stable machine learning model that actually continue to train themselves over the new data, and that can be used for research and clinical purpose, and is a sort of tech demo to see how could be the hospital of the future. Unfortunately, my experience at the moment is limited to Europe, but I'm sure that in Florida I saw incredible results from paper from San Florida Hospital, where they actually created a huge neural network to predict the outcome of patient admitted to the hospital for surgery with extremely good accuracy. Then I'm sure that in Stanford, Harvard are the best places that at the moment are creating new knowledge, and they are really on the verge of a small revolution from that point of view. To remain to the Western world, then China as well is producing an incredible amount, but I saw also on top of China there was also a lot of literature about using NPL for reading the medical notes and predicting the patient outcome from Hong Kong, from Beijing. So I would say that the revolution at the moment is driven by United States and China, while Europe is trying to keep the pace.
For the listeners today who are perhaps looking to learn more about artificial intelligence and machine learning, and especially how that can be applied to healthcare, what forms of education would you recommend for them?
I would say that there are different approaches that can be done in this way. The first one could be the classical academia research one. So nowadays, all the major universities are offering machine learning and AI smart courses. That can, because nowadays machine learning is becoming in all science and biology, etc., is becoming pretty much the new way of interpreting data on top of statistics. Something that I would suggest to somebody who is interested in pursuing this career is to starting to read about statistical machine. Statistical learning, that is a sort of fusion between statistics and machine learning. Then, if somebody is interested from a work point of view, there are a lot of boot camps that usually are in 6 or 8 weeks, and they go from zero to hero. Those could be found from everywhere, from Udemy up to with a just a simple Google research, it's possible to find really, really good boot camps that gives the structure of how to interpret the data and how to use the model. Because actually, what we are talking about are two different topics that are merged together: data analysis and modelization. Finally. For myself, I keep myself updated with PubMed, with reading the literature, with going on different website like let me just search that. Sorry, I think I cannot find it. So there are different websites that I can give you later on. There are different websites that can really be helpful. But usually, at the moment, what my main source is LinkedIn, because I can find a lot of groups of people that actually interact. And there is a little bit for everybody, because my main interests are not only in medicine. I'm also a little bit of an artist myself, and the generative models are extremely helpful also for creating imaging or video or this kind of stuff. And there is literally a big world out of there, just one Google research away.
I understand outside of work, you run an Italian website based on the topic of fake news. From running this, what have you learned about deciphering whether a piece of news is truthful or fabrication?
This year is the 10th anniversary of actually this website. It's called Butac. That is the first Italian debunking website. And so in our experience, we saw that there was a huge evolution of the fake news in the last 10 years. And the technology was extremely important for that. So. The first thing that we always say is to look at the citation. So if somebody is saying something, maybe we can do a simple example. If I wrote a paper about the fact that eating an apple a day take the doctor away, I need to give my data, or I need to have a citation that is published in a scientific research engine or somewhere that is recognized and that actually underwent peer review. This is an example. So if we want to find I'm really confused, sorry. So the way that we can use is actually look at the citation and the proof. So asking for the proof. Nowadays, with the application of AI, or the new text to video, text to image, etc., it's becoming a little bit more difficult to actually do this work of debunking. But for the images, we can still see that there are a lot of small hallucination inside of the images, and also we always need to contextualize. So we always need to ask the simple question: why, where, whom, what happened, etc., to try to have a proper idea of what's going on. For example, there was an image of the Pope with a bomber a few days ago, and it was extremely well done, but after a few seconds that you look at the image, you can find some small mistakes. But also, we have to ask ourselves, when was this picture taken, who made it, why, etc. In using this type of logic, was possible to actually find that it was a fake image in very short time. So overall, at the moment, there are big groups like Snopes, or there is a lot of Operation Intel that is on Twitter or other social that actually help the people to understand if something is fake or not. And the people can actually send them an info source for a source check, and they are actually there are people trained and who works usually in intelligence, and they are trained to help people to understand what's true and what's not.
Pietro, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. What one piece of advice would you be leaving the listeners with today?
if we want really to have AI in medicine, I think we need to continue the development, but have multidisciplinary collaboration between the engineers and the doctor. And the two groups needs to talk each other and have a shared talks of what they want to create. Because at the moment, I just want a multidisciplinary collaboration.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you very much. It has been a really pleasure.
Thank you for listening to episode 47 of the MedTech Podcast. If you have not already done so, please subscribe. If you wish to learn more about Pietro, you can connect with him on LinkedIn or visit his company website, the links of which are provided in the description. If there are any particular topics or guests you would like for me to have on the show in future, then feel free to reach out.